Couple of quick plugs before we start today's show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, our handle is @NarbosPodcast. If you want to email us, our email address is narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com. Hit us up with your comments on future episodes of Degrassi Junior High and Degrassi High. And if you want to be on a future episode, let us know as well, and we'll try to set something up. You can also follow our show on all of the podcast platforms, including iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. So please give us a follow and subscribe on any of those sites, and you will be able to get us pushed to you every single week. The theme music for this show is brought to you by a band called Ew, You're a Girl and Girls Suck. They are a punk band from here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And their Bandcamp page is iagags.bandcamp.com. That's iagags.bandcamp.com. They used to watch Degrassi episodes when they took breaks from recording back in the 90s. Anyways, that's about it for the plugs. Let's get to this week's episode.
Ho, ho, everyone. It's a special Christmas edition of your favorite podcast, Narbos and Broomheads. And today I'm so excited. We'll be discussing the Pee-wee's Playhouse Christmas special. And I have some very special Christmas elves joining me today. So let's head over to Santa's workshop. You thought it was in the North Pole, but no, it's in Newfoundland. Who's over there?
Oh, ho, ho, ho. It's me, an elf, and also Ted, the elf. Boogity boogity, all scary.
I'm trying to figure out what the like the Newfoundland version of like ho 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 is. I'm like,
something like that. Oh, you must be from here. Oh, wow, a local Newfoundlander. He just sounds like he's up the street. Is it Barry? Oh my God, what are the odds? That's a boom. yeah, this is Ted. Hello. Hello, everyone. Let's see. Who do we throw it over to? The music man, Alan, over in TO.
My nickname, the music man. Nailed it.
Music Man
69. That's a pretty cool nickname. Like, you could do worse.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Alan, the music man Gates, as you all know me.
Cool guy.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Cool. I'm in Toronto. I guess I'm also an elf. Boogity woogity. So
that's what they say.
Yeah. We have another elf who has to get the workshop to make her a cable for her computer to work. So she may be on a little later. But in the meantime, Arlo, you have the specialist elf of all to introduce.
I do, and that would be me, because I forgot to introduce myself.
Oh.
I'm Arlo, coming to you from Regina, Saskatchewan. But I think the elf that Alan is referring to is our very special guest today. He is my husband and yours, Drew.
Ooh, polyamory. Here we
go.
Yeah.
Wait, did we just get polyamorous? Did that happen? Like it's just by vocalization.
Okay,
we made a decision. Like
everybody so calm down. Okay.
No. Ted and Barry, Alan, Courtney, we're all in a polycule. This just happened. So just like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being here so much with us today, Drew. I know that Pee-wee's Playhouse, Pee-wee Herman, Paul Rubens is close to your heart, so I'm really excited
very
that
much.
You were able to join us
today.
Oh,
did you get this show in the United States, Drew?
Yeah.
Just
are you joking or are you serious?
I'm joking.
Okay, I was like, I'm surprised you got it in Canada. I was like, okay, no. Yeah, we had it. It was a thing.
I mean, all the stuff you had, we had, but the stuff we had, a lot of which you didn't have, like... Eventually, you had Degrassi. You didn't have Littlest Hobo, which we'll talk about in a week. But
it's weird. It's like the weirdest stuff. Like Goosebumps. Like we got that, but like it was not, like, I didn't realize it was Canadian. And then all of a sudden people were like, oh, hey, like, oh, what's that mask going on, Abut? And I'd be like, why did they say it like that? Like, and like, I didn't understand what was happening. And like there were shows that we got that, like, I didn't realize were Canadian until I became like an adult. Like, so now I know, like, now I know that these are Canadian shows, but you know, it was just one of, like, those things.
Why is this show weird and low budget? Yeah. Later on, you're like, oh, got it. I understand.
Yeah, all the money goes to healthcare here, so we do not have money for television production.
That's right.
Drew, I'm curious to know, as a transplanted American in Canada, what's the most fucked up thing that you've experienced living in Canada?
I think that, like I was in the ER with a woman who had, like, when I broke my ankle, like, I shattered it. It was facing, like, behind me. When I was in the ER with her, and she also had the same incident happen to her, except opposite. Like, she was in America when it happened, and I was in Canada when it happened. And since I didn't have healthcare at the time, my injury was like $25,000 or something like that. And hers was $198,000. That threw me off. Like, she was sitting across from me, like, talking. And I was like, how much is yours? And she told me, and I'm like, yours was like, four times as much as mine. And I was like, oh my God. And like, they, apparently America didn't like, take her Canadian insurance. What? So yeah, that was like really interesting for me, like, to have it happen. Like,
just
that was
weird, just artificial inflation of healthcare
yes
prices, yeah, in America, yeah, basically.
That's crazy.
That's a profit.
And we're like sitting in the same room, like, dealing with the same problem. Like, it was weird. Like, yeah,
prices that we give to Americans, that's how we do it.
Right. So that's why they call you a 1 foot Drew now. They take it off.
1 foot Drew.
I'm not paying that.
I think also one of the weird things for you, like, just based on timing, like, you were kind of in Canada as an outsider looking in through the whole Rise of Trump thing.
Oh, that was,
and like,
so
I
scary.
I think Americans,
yeah,
within the country are experiencing it maybe in a much different way than watching it from afar, kind of thing. So
yeah. I think I hear another elf, everybody. Who's there? Hopefully for real.
It's me. Poopy elf.
Poopy elf.
That's all I got. Hi, everybody. Remember me? I used to be on this podcast, and now I'm back.
Welcome back.
It's Courtney. Ho,
with
ho, ho.
A little less nose cartilage, possibly.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a lot right now. It's pretty swollen.
Oh, God.
So what? Tell us a story about how you destroyed your face, Courtney.
Do I have to talk like an elf, or can I just tell you what happened?
Yeah. Do whatever you want.
Dealer's choice.
Okay. I want to hear you talk like an elf and tell the story. Like, I'm curious about that. I'm like, I want to see how you do this. Like, it's an adventure. Like,
okay. I can't talk like an elf. You caught me. But what I can do is tell you how I broke my nose in Las Vegas. It was a fun adventure. It ended with me trying to wear heels and drink tequila and walk through a door.
Uh-huh. All of those things sound terrible. Like, those are all terrible, terrible things.
They were very fun. but yeah, I basically tripped on my heels and into a door and smashed my nose off of it.
Oh.
And it broke. So I got to learn all about the American healthcare system. So I'm really sad that Stacey's not here tonight. Get well soon.
Well,
but it was great.
Yeah, Drew can tell you about the American healthcare system. He hasn't forgotten.
Didn't we just talk about that like minutes ago?
Yeah, Courtney wasn't on.
Oh, well, I was too busy figuring out technology. Uh-huh. I'm sorry. I thought once you came here and got universal healthcare, they wiped your brain of all of the American. But I guess not.
But yes, poor Stacy has what we believe to be COVID at this time. So feel better soon, Stacy.
Yeah.
Do
it.
All right. Like, who the hell is Stacy? Like, okay.
Okay. Drew Wall. This is good.
Avid listener, everybody. Drew.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry.
So let's talk a little bit about Paul Reubens, Pee Wee Herman, the Pee Wee's Playhouse show. So basically, we open in the 1970s where Paul Reubens created this character, Pee Wee Herman. Around 1980, he auditioned for Saturday Night Live, and he made it to the last 22 finalists that were going to be put on the show that season, and they picked Gilbert Gottfried over him, and he believed that his career was over, but he was able to put together this stage show called the Pee Wee Herman Show, and it was a successful stage show. And it was also eventually was televised, and it went well, and hooked up with Tim Burton. They did Pee Wee's Big Adventure around 1985, and that was a surprise hit. And what ended up happening is the television executives then approached Paul Reubens to produce a children's Saturday morning television show, Pee Wee's Playhouse. It had a huge budget for, they had enough faith in it that it had a huge budget for each episode. It was like over $300,000 per episode budget. And Paul Reubens had basically total creative control over it. It was a very successful show. It ran from 1986 to 1990, I think it was. This is the called Pee Wee's Playhouse, and this is the Christmas special that came out of that successful run, basically. Did anybody here, I mean, I know Drew, you watched Pee Wee's Playhouse. Did anyone else watch Pee Wee's Playhouse on any kind of regular basis?
I did.
100%.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Loved it. Good.
And like all the tropes from PV's Playhouse, I mean, you probably don't need to describe any of them, because over the course of the Christmas special, they pretty much nail all of the regular shit that they do in all of the regular shows, right?
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, the overall feel of the show, you know, it was very heavily inspired by the types of shows that Paul Reubens used to watch in the 50s. So Howdy Doody, you know, those types of kids shows. And it was kind of a spoof, I guess, on those shows when he was doing the stage show, sort of more geared towards adults. But then when we went into these children's television, you know, territory, it became a little bit more earnest and sort of just a retelling of those types of shows.
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, I think that, like, he was, like, it wasn't so much a spoof. I think it was, like, him trying to just reiterate, like, what he watched as a kid, and, like, try to, like as someone in control, like, what you would do if you had the ability to, like, control the things that you loved, like, and you, like, could do that. Like, that to me is, like, where I, like, view, like, the Pee-wee's Playhouse. Like, it was, I don't know, like, that's just sort of how I looked at it.
I like that. It's like a lucid dream that goes on forever.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, and of course, Paul Reubens passed away this year. So it is, yes. I think, a fitting tribute that we are talking about this one.
Indeed.
This year for our just Christmas episode.
Arlo, you mentioned the whole like 50s show kind of references. And mm-hmm. my parents were really, well, everybody knows that the Degrassi edits to School's Out, my parents tried to make for me, not watching the condom scene. But they were really weird about what shows I watched. And one of the only reasons I was allowed to watch Pee Wee was because of the Annette Funicello and Frankie Avalon connection.
Really?
Yeah. Really? So my parents saw them on the show as like, and they're like, okay, this show must be wholesome and healthy if fucking Annette's on it. They didn't say fuck, but you know what I mean? So anyways, I'm grateful for that because it allowed me to actually watch Pee Wee Herman without, you know, censorship.
Which is funny because like it did kind of develop a bit of a cult following when the show was on the air, because there were sort of like these, you know, jokes that were, you know, kind of would go over the heads of children, but the adults would get kind of thing. So yes. Your parents chose wrong.
That's what yeah.
Yep.
Suckers. You got punked, mom and dad.
Would you call what, oh, I love what, that. What Pee Wee Herman does, is would this be considered kitsch? Love that word, kitsch. Is that
I think
possible?
There's definitely kitsch and camp connections there. And particularly this special, I think one of the reasons why it has sort of endured as a cult classic is because there are so many sort of these campy icons, these counterculture icons, these queer icons that come up in this particular special, which I think is really interesting. And really, like, how this came up, and we, Drew and I watched the DVD commentary in preparation for this show, and, you know, they were just saying, we had a wish list of stars that we wanted to come on this on this special, and we got almost everybody we asked for, and they were just amazed by it. You know, they were fan-tarting about these stars as much as anybody else. You know, these were their idols.
That Cher was the biggest one that they didn't expect to, like, get. They're like, Cher was like, okay. And Pee Wee was like, I can't believe we got Cher. I just can't. Like he was, like, really, like, having a moment with that.
There's a lot of really interesting stars on this, which, you know, I don't think you would see in any kind of special nowadays. It is very sort of queer friendly and... in the best sense.
I never saw this before. I think I knew that it existed, but I'd never seen it. And when they, at the start of the show, entered, or were like, here are all the people who are going to be on the show, I was like, is this like one of the gags? Like, that they've listed all these kind of, like, because there's like some mega A-list people that are on this show, and I'm like, oh, they're fucking with us. And nope, they're all legitimately there.
But also at the same time, like, I think it's really cool. Like, if this was made nowadays, I think that the producers would be forcing sort of, like, the, you know, the
under contract.
Like, they'd be, you know, it'd be, you know, Justin Bieber and, like, Olivia Rodrigo, or because they're the hottest stars right now, kind of thing. And these ones, like, because, you know, production had that, like, Pee-wee, Paul Rubens had all that creative control over it. You know, he was able to get a really interesting cast of characters here. And in that way, it's kind of, it ends up being a little bit more timeless. You know, you have, like, Frankie and Annette and you know, stars like that who...
they didn't
you know,
have, like, the Where's the Beef, like, Woman and Fido Dido and, like, shit like that. Well, the California raisins.
Yeah. So, and, you know, when you look at it, it was a show for kids made in 1988. Now, I'm sure kids from 1988 who are 8 years old in 1988, they don't know who Annette and Frankie are, you know, but they were still included in this. And I think that's, for me, what gives it a little bit more of a timeless quality.
I remember, like, when I was a kid, like, I knew who Little Richard was, but, like, I didn't know how big he was, like, to older people. Like I remember seeing him in, like, you know, like, random things and, like, you know, like, the Pee-wee's Christmas special, and, like, seeing him. And I was like, that guy. And, like I found out he was, like, a big musician in the 50s and shit. Like, and I didn't know about that. So, like, that, to me, that was, like, it gave me, like, an opening to Little Richard. Like,
So why don't we get started with the special here? So we open up on some animation on a snowy landscape, and on the DVD commentary, there's a woman named Prudence Fenton. She's an animation producer, and she said that they spent hours and hours setting up this sequence and shooting it, and there was a small earthquake that basically ruined everything, and they had to reshoot the entire thing. So this beginning sequence is really a labor of love by the animators. This part, too, it's the only episode of Pee-wee's Playhouse that does not use the original theme music. The original theme song was performed by none other than Cyndi Lauper.
Yes.
But this one uses sort of a Christmas-themed score instead. So inside, we have a bunch of solemnly singing marines This is actually the UCLA Men's Glee Club dressed as Marines, not the real Marines. Pee-wee Herman appears. The music starts to groove. We get a couple of fabulous gold-clad Motown backup singers. The one you see on the left is Nikki Harris, who's actually one of Madonna's longtime backup singers. So there's your first, like, queer icon.
Well, I mean, so I watched this with Sarah, who is a member of the queer community. So she said... She said this, so I think I can say it. She's like, that singing group looks very gay. Like, so I would say the whole group is very much queer icon, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. Like men's choir, right away. The first shot, men's choir.
Yep.
Right?
It's a whole room full of beef. Look at those dudes. Little fucking, like, little goddamn jawlines. Like, jeez. Like the freaking
I wish
meat
that
market.
Was their
look
band name.
Oh, yeah.
look at those jawlines.
Room of beef. Jawlines.
Yes.
We get a roll call of all the characters and guest stars, like the Mickey Mouse Club. Again, big influence for Paul Rubens. You know, it's complete with Annette, right? Which is a great gag. And Paul Rubens has said that said on the commentary that this opening sequence is one of his favorites in this entire special. It's just so fantastical, right?
No, he said it was his favorite. It was like, that was his favorite thing in the entire special. Like, it was the opening sequence.
With the roll call.
Yeah, I mean, they did not spare any expense, as you said. Like, there was budget for this show.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Fantastic. So, like I said, you know, they had this wish list of all of these amazing stars and got almost everyone they asked for. They did say that a notable exception was Elizabeth Taylor, who apparently sent a very kind letter declining.
She's probably out getting married again. That's an old school joke. Huh?
That's a 1991 Jay Leno monologue.
Yeah. Joke.
Did you hear this one? Elizabeth Taylor got married again. Huh? What do you think? That's crazy, right? Crazy. Okay. Thanks, Jay.
So, Pee-wee and Conky are going over his really, really long list of gifts. He's asked for a yo-yo, but Conky, points out that he already has a yo-yo. And Conky, by the way, if you're wondering, is puppeted by a guy in the suit with his knees all scrunched up to his chest.
Conky's the robot, right?
Conky is the robot.
The stereos.
For our Canadian listeners, do not get Conky the robot on Pee-wee's Playhouse mixed up with Conky the ventriloquist dummy that Bubbles uses in Trailer Park Boys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For our American listeners, I have no idea what the hell you just said.
They know.
Yeah.
You watch Trailer Park Boys.
They know
Boys.
What they don't know.
No, I hate that show. That show sucks.
What? Trailer Park Boys?
Yeah, I'm not anti-Canadian content. I just mean, like, I don't like Trailer Park Boys. I don't like it. I've tried, and I don't like it. It's not my thing.
But you do like wrestling. You do like Letterkenny, though.
Oh, Letterkenny's great. Yeah, that's just okay. That show's awesome. Wow. Yeah.
All right, fine. You're allowed. You're allowed to stay.
Different populations.
Yeah.
Arlo.
Pee-wee goes to his secret toy cupboard and finds the yo-yo, and I think every kid was fascinated with this Lazy Susan toy cupboard when the show was on. I know I was.
Ooh.
First of all, it's in this amazing shimmery wall, which is just hundreds of tiny pieces of foil with a fan and some lights is what they said is how that was created. And then it's like a Rolodex of toys. Like, I can't imagine a kid that isn't, you know, in awe of this item, right?
The set designer said that this was like the most difficult thing to create. Like, they were just like, this was impossible. Like, I can't believe we made this. Like, and it was a very difficult thing, like, to, like, make this, like, rotating set design.
Well, Pee-wee Herman lives in a smart home, but it's 1988. Before all this shit happens, yes. Right? Everything is automated. There's all sorts of fucking gadgets. And, you know, everything kind of works around Pee-wee's life. so he doesn't have to do a lot of work because he's got like robot servants and animals and automation in his home that takes care of it for him.
It was fascinating to me as a kid, honestly.
Yeah.
Pee-wee finds the yo-yo. We get some cute animation of the yo-yo tricks. And I guess I should say claymation, right? This is sort of the era of claymation. Mm-hmm. Back with Conky, we print out Pee-wee's super long list and they stuff it into a huge envelope for Santa. So then Miss Yvonne, the most beautiful girl in Puppet Land, comes in wearing a fantastic Christmas dress and hairdo. And Lynn Marie Stewart, who plays Miss Yvonne, said on the DVD commentary that she still has the dress.
Nice.
She's worn it several times in Christmas parades and various appearances. And she said that nowadays when like little kids don't know who Miss Yvonne is because the show's not on anymore, she tells them that she is Jennifer Christmas, Santa's second wife.
Well,
wow,
that's amazing.
Wow.
Well, yeah. Santa got married young and you know it just didn't work out. They just became different people.
They grew apart
and grew apart. They just became
Santa's,
you know,
not the same
friends
person
more
he
than
was
love.
10 years ago.
Yeah.
Kid.
So and then this scene demonstrates some of the brilliance of the show that you were referencing earlier, because if you're a child watching this, you're like, oh, everybody thinks that she's so beautiful. Me as an adult watching it, I'm like, those characters want to fuck Miss Yvonne. Like, and when.
Oh, are we allowed to talk like that? Okay. Oh. I was trying to hold back, no. But okay. Okay. And yeah, then, I wanted to fuck Miss Yvonne when I was a kid. Yes, definitely.
All right. I guess not just the characters on the show, everybody. Is there a Miss Yvonne dress at Industrial Love that you can pick up Arlo for?
Yeah, right. I do think that
Arlo, get the gift card.
One wonderful thing about Miss Yvonne is that she is, like, she's so clearly the most beautiful girl in all of Puppetland, but, like, she doesn't have unattainable beauty. You know, she doesn't look like a Playboy model or something like that. You know, it's her, like, effervescence that makes her so beautiful. Right?
Honkers too.
I've always liked that about Miss Yvonne. She's an accessible beauty.
Also, when all the characters say they want to get with her, Miss Yvonne says, "There's enough of me to go around." Like, this show is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Flory says, "Come stand over me."
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That was
a very specific request.
Yeah.
Flory, by the way, is a piece of floor. So he's on the floor looking up, just in case you're wondering at people.
Yeah.
It's like how weird can you be at a certain point? Like, it's like a floor that is, like, alive. And it's like, stand over me. And you're like, as a human being, you're like...
There's definitely some sexual connotations there.
Sure are.
Yeah, right up the skirt. Miss Yvonne and Pee-wee exchange gifts, and Pee-wee receives the first of what will be a running gag, a Christmas fruitcake.
Does anyone here like fruitcake?
Okay, yeah, okay.
Like a fruitcake.
Like, Arlo and I talked about this when we were watching this, and, like, I haven't had a fruitcake in, like, 20 years. So I'm like, I don't know. Like, do I like fruitcake? Like, I wouldn't mind having a slice, honestly. Like, and, like, has anyone had fruitcake in a while? Like, when was the last time you had fruitcake? When was the last time everyone had fruitcake?
Well, like, it's a weird thing, right? Because it's pretty, like, famously celebrated as being the shitty Christmas dessert. But I'm assuming, like, you know, many foods, there is probably a pretty avid fan club out there of fruitcake as well. I've had it before. I can recall the taste, the horror of the taste of fruitcake. But, but it's been like at least 30 years.
That's what I'm saying. Alan, that, like, no one's had it in a while. Yeah. Like,
mom used to make a fruitcake that was like soaked in apricot brandy for several weeks. Uh-huh. And of course, that was when I was a little kid, and you know, I wasn't into fruitcake and alcohol and things like that at that time, but like now I'm just like, should I make a fruitcake and soak it in brandy for several weeks?
I'm literally sitting here going, yes, 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 you should. I'm on board.
And for wrestling fans, I used to get confused when I was a kid because there was Brutus the Barber Beefcake, but the fans would call him Fruitcake, and then it was not till I was older where I was like, oh, that's inappropriate. So
yeah.
Right. I remember.
And then you throw in things like mincemeat, and it just gets confusing.
Delicious.
Anytime Alan said fruitcake just now, I thought it was code word for vagina. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Wow. I went over to Courtney's Courtney's last year in the winter, and she had the biggest fruitcake at her house.
It was soaked in brandy for a month.
I wish you could see me right now. I'm like doubled over, like trying not to make jokes, and I'm just like, this is so good. This is so good. I love this. Yeah. I'm happy this happened.
Oh, I say fruitcake so many more times during the review.
Can't wait. Yeah.
You're welcome, everybody.
So Pee Wee goes to put his fruitcake in the fridge.
No.
And we get some claymation of the food celebrating Christmas. And Prudence Fenton, the animator, said it was super fun decorating that puppet set for Christmas. Once we get up to the freezer food fish out another present for Pee Wee. It is a teeny tiny fruitcake.
Like you could barely fit your fingers in it, everybody. That's how small it was.
I'm trying so hard not to say anything. I'm like, stop. Uh-huh.
So someone calls on the picture phone. It's Whoopi Goldberg.
That's a big get.
Yeel.
Yeah. So, in 1988, she's fairly famous at this point. She had Color Purple in 1985, Jumpin' Jack Flash in 1986, which kind of catapulted her into fame. Still 2 years away from Ghost in 1990. So Whoopi asks if she can be cast in his Christmas special, but Pee-wee is a dick to her, which is kind of a running gag throughout the show. He is really kind of a dick to a bunch of the guest stars.
I mean, Pee-wee Herman is like this endearing character, but he's also like a charming asshole to everybody. So like he's
like a kid. Yeah.
Like
he's kind of supposed to be a kid. Like he's
that's the joke. Like that's the shtick.
After they hang up, Magic Screen invites Pee-wee to play Connect the Christmas Dots with her. And now Magistrine is a deceptively difficult puppet. We found out on the commentary. Her face is controlled by remote control.
Oh.
Her arms are manually puppeted. And she has a green screen square in the middle of her that had to be painstakingly filled in for every single shot that she appears in. And apparently it took hours and hours and hours every episode with the technology that was available at that time. So, appreciate that Magic Screen, everybody. We play Connect the Dots, and the dots form a sleigh. And Magic Johnson, who is Magic Screen's cousin, because that's how names work, joins, and they go on a sleigh ride. And on the commentary, Paul Rubens was really marveling that they were actually able to get Magic Johnson at this time. He was playing for the Lakers at this time. And apparently they only had like 1 hour to shoot everything because he had a game that night.
He wasn't busy at the time, fucking everything in sight, which is what he did. Just wondering.
Okay. I mean, probably that too. Why they needed to cut it down to an hour?
I have a friend who claims that Magic Johnson is his dad. And like it's weird. It's like he always like talks about it, and I'm like, I don't think Magic Johnson is your dad.
Well,
but at the same time, I'm kind of like,
could be.
He is
could
your
be.
Dad. Like is it's his name one of those Magic? Weird things.
Yeah,
where I'm like okay, like
yeah, Magic Junior.
Yeah, that's how you know if he's like, his dad or not.
So at the time that Magic Johnson was on this show, of course he was Him and, I guess, Larry Bird, and now to a lesser extent at this time, Michael Jordan are kind of like the big three in the NBA. And if this was shot in 1988 at Christmas, is that right? Then
it was shot around Thanksgiving, yeah.
Okay, so they had, the Lakers were just off of their fifth world championship, and in fact the last one of Magic Johnson's run with them. So pretty big deal.
Huge sports star at this time, yeah. So back at the playhouse, Pee-wee is sad that he's forgotten about the decorations. He was only thinking of himself, and Christmas is a time we should be thinking about what we can do for others. He wishes he hadn't been so selfish.
Wish?
Did someone say wish? So Jambi, by the way, played by John Paragon, also a co-writer of this episode. It was Paul Rubens and John Paragon that wrote this entire episode.
Also, it was his birthday 3 days ago.
Hey, saying.
I mean, he's dead, but still.
I know, but like,
he still has a birthday.
Yeah,
happy then sad.
Posthumous birthday. Yeah,
yeah. So his makeup, Jambi's makeup, was done by Academy Award winning makeup artist V. Neal. You may know her from the reality TV makeup show Face Off.
I thought you were going to say you,
she's a judge.
You would know V. Neal from the band Motley Crue.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
So. That's Vin.
Welcome to the jungle!
There's this show on Netflix called Face Off that's like special effects makeup, which I watch, and she's one of the judges on that. But she's also the makeup head for a ridiculous number of makeup franchises like Hunger Games, Pirates of the Caribbean, X-Men, like all the Tim Burton movies. So she's a big deal, and yeah, she did Jambi's makeup.
Jambi is a genie head, by the way. Like there's yes. curtains, and then you only see Jambi's head, and it's clearly a genie. And I will always remember. So after Pee-wee's Playhouse was off the air, and one of his kind of follow-up specials, there was a joke with Jambi where Jambi got a gift and it was hands, because of course Jambi's just a head, and Jambi says, "Ooh, there are so many things I want to do with these," and disappears. And again, I was like, that joke is good for everybody. So,
mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah,
you know, like,
again,
like,
Courtney, your parents chose wrong letting you watch this.
To be all honest, like, I've never understood how Pee-wee came across the head of a genie, like. And just, like, kept it, and, like everyone's cool with that. Like, it's just, like, okay, like, we're it's, like, indentured servitude. Like, every day he gets a wish, and, like, there's just a, he keeps the head. Like, it's fucking weird to me.
Of all the things in the house, the genie head, not the fucking dinosaur that he, like, he found a dinosaur and won't let it go outside.
I think of all the weird things in the show, I don't know that a genie is the weirdest one.
He built an upskirt floor, pervert. Like
not just a genie, but like a genie's head that like the genie has no embodiment. Like that was the weirdest part for me.
You need to watch more wrestling, Drew. It's totally normal.
So Pee-wee tells Jambi his problem. He gets an extra wish to use for later. And then Mekaleka hi, Mecha hi ni ho, Mekaleka hi, Mecha ho ho ho. And Jambi magically decorates the playhouse. So then Reba the mail lady arrives. And if you recognize Reba the mail lady, it's likely from Law and Order, which she was on for years and years and years. And they exchange gifts, and Pee-wee receives another fruitcake.
Ha 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 ha. Reba and, gives Pee-wee her fruitcake? Okay, cool.
Reba brings in a great big box to deliver to the playhouse, and Grace Jones comes out of the box.
Yes.
Terrifying Grace Jones. Fantastic. Yes.
Doesn't she look amazing? She is wearing the most bonkers outfits. It's like a molded bodice, which is made by a famous Japanese designer, what can only be described as gray dish gloves. And like, it's a literal square of foam as a hat, and she specifically said she was on a plane and looked at this square of foam and thought it looked like a hat, so she cut a slit in it and wore it on the show. It literally is just a foam sheet. And so
only Grace Jones, like, yes. Only Grace Jones could like see like a piece of fabric and be like, I'm going to cut a slit in that and make it my hat. And I'm going to wear it at the Pee-wee's Christmas special. It's going to be great.
She looks fantastic. She looks weird, as only Grace Jones can. You're right, Ted. She's a little terrifying. Like,
love it.
I love it. So yep. Grace sees Pee-wee and says, "You're not the president. You're Pee-wee Herman." And Reba reads the label that the package was supposed to be delivered to the White House, not the Playhouse. Wah, wah.
That's a mistake we all make. We've been there.
Yes. Yeah. But before Grace has to go back into the box, she performs Little Drummer Boy, and it is weird and fantastic, and it's one of the weirdest performances of Little Drummer Boy that exists on film, probably.
And Pee-wee cameos of the Pee-wee dance, so I was pleased with that.
But Grace Jones apparently got this arrangement from David Bowie, which, I mean, I'm just thrilled about. She was apparently sitting next to him on a plane, and they were talking about what she was going to sing, and he had some arrangements from when he had recorded with Bing Crosby that weren't used, and he gave her this arrangement. So it's the David Bowie connection, which means that it's the best Christmas special in the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So the next guests are Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello. And I guess for any of our listeners who don't know who they are, you know, Annette Funicello was a very famous member of the Mickey Mouse Club, of course. And then in later years, she sort of teamed up with Frankie Avalon, and they did a lot of, you know, beach movies, Beach Blanket Bingo, that kind of thing. Really big stars in the 1950s and 60s.
Wait. Fun fact, a lot of people know Annette specifically because she had an A and an F on her shirt, and she grew huge boobs as she got older, and the A and the F started spreading apart, and it became a thing.
That's more of an observation rather than a fun fact.
Yeah, no. People like, were just like watching, and they were like, huh. And it was like you know, kids went through puberty and were watching that and being like,
Yeah, it was the awakening for a lot of young people watching the Mickey Mouse Club. So they show us how to do some crafts to make Christmas cards with a potato and a screen. And Pee-wee commands them to make 500 before sundown.
He's so mean in that scene.
Well, they were saying on the commentary that they were both extremely wonderful sports about being on this, and both of them, you know, were on the set a lot longer than most of the other guests, and they just, you know, they were just game for anything. Like, they were just like, "Hey, Annette, put green paint on your teeth," and she was like, "Okay." Like, they were they were down. So, so next we see Pee-wee sees Cher decorating Conky like a Christmas tree, and apparently everyone was just like, "I can't believe we got fucking Cher." Everyone was walking around on eggshells because it's fucking Cher, and she was basically like whisked in and out in like 25 minutes because she had such a tight schedule. And we find out that the secret word is year, and we all know what to do whenever someone says a secret word: scream real loud. And this is, of course, a recurring segment on the Pee-wee's Playhouse show. And Cher says the secret word, "Christmas is my favorite time of year." And everyone screams, yeah. Yeah. Good job, everybody.
Oh, that was terrifying.
So Cher is kind of whisked away after Cher leaves so she can go continue her perfume tour. She was on a perfume tour at that time. So she gets whisked away after Cher leaves. The King of Cartoons arrives. And the King of Cartoons is a really prolific actor named William Marshall.
This is the second one, because they replaced the first one.
Right. So this one here, I mean, very specifically, he is Blackula. That's probably his most well-known role. Is having played Blackula in the Blackula franchise. The King of Cartoons has two more fruitcakes for Pee-wee. And King kindly lets Annette do the Let the Cartoon Begin honors. And then when they turn on the TV, Joan Rivers appears on the Hollywood Squares set to wish them a Merry Christmas. And then we watch a completely insane cartoon.
Yeah, they show... I mean, I don't know if these are cartoons that were written specifically for this show that are old-timey, but like these are old-timey feel cartoons, right?
They're actual old-timey.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I remember watching this when I was like a child, like when I was like six. Like I remember seeing the same cartoon and then seeing it on Pee-wee when I was like older. Like, yeah, these were like...
I'm not sure if maybe these are old enough that they were in the public domain already. And maybe that's why they sort of used them, so they didn't have to pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they did pay for them. I'm not sure. But this one that we're watching, it's actually a 1936 cartoon called Christmas Comes But Once a Year by Fleischer Studios. And it features what is a reoccurring character from Buddy Boop cartoon called Grampy. And the actual cartoon is longer than what's shown. It's about 8 minutes, the full one, and it's cut down to fit the amount of time that they had for it. And that's one of the reasons they had these old cartoon segments in the shows, is they could just cut it as long or as short as they needed it to fill whatever time was left.
Well, and kids are stupid, right? Like, they don't give a fuck about the beginning and the ending. Like, you just end it, and they're like, oh, I guess that's it. And yeah.
So this cartoon features a kind of really neat bit of technology that was very specific to Fleischer Studios cartoons at the time, which allowed for that shot when Grampy makes the Christmas trees out of umbrellas, and it like mixes the animation of a real like animation with a real set, and it uses something that's called a stereoptical camera, so very indicative of that studio at this time period. So kind of a neat shot. And after that, we get a quick visit from Billy Baloney. And uh-huh. Billy Baloney is kind of a mystery, because like all of the other puppets in Puppetland are sentient. And Billy Baloney is like a puppet. So it's kind of like the Pluto Goofy both dogs situation.
Stuff starts getting weird with Billy Baloney. It's like because Pee-wee puppets him, it's like okay, like you're in puppet land where everything else is sentient, but like you're not, like okay, like,
yeah
Billy it's Baloney
is a bit of a mystery. But Mr. Kite suddenly announces that it's snowing. And Pee-wee excitedly changes into his winter outfit, which is kind of amazing. It's huge. And we learned on the commentary that it has an actual cooling setting in it, so he wouldn't overheat. Because this is, of course, filmed on sound stages, not actually outside.
What?
Oh!
Damn!
Slow down.
Frankie and Annette want to come to play outside in the snow as well, but Pee-wee makes them stay behind in his Christmas card sweatshop.
I mean, I like that not only are the celebrities on the show, but they're willing to let Pee-wee make them look like assholes. So.
I mean, he was doing them a favor. Annette and Frankie don't belong in the winter.
Yeah.
Schools.
Yep. Summer kids.
Yeah.
So out in the snow, snow is made out of plastic, by the way. Confirmed on the commentary. Pee-wee shows us how to make snow angels, and mystery tracks in the snow. Cowboy Curtis.
Oh yes.
Comes along, and is fooled by the mystery tracks. Ooh, mysterious! And this is, of course, incredibly famous and respected actor Lawrence Fishburne.
Yes, Morpheus showing up at Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Fabulous pink and purple cowboy outfit.
Asking Pee-wee if he wants to take the red pill or the blue pill.
You beat me to it.
Yes.
I was so close.
Boom.
You got, yeah, that was good. That was good. Okay.
then they hear the heavenly intonations of the Del Rubio triplets, wearing the shortest skirts ever seen on a woman of a certain age.
Looking good, like ladies.
Octogenarian.
Singing Winter Wonderland.
Taste the biscuit.
Oh, I wish.
Yeah, Sarah, calm down, Teddy. Calm down.
Sarah immediately was like, they're not wearing pants. Like, that was the first thing that she said.
So the Del Rubio triplets, now they're a bit of a cult act, or they were a bit of a cult act. I didn't know who they were when I was a kid, of course. They are kind of a strange act to pick for a children's Christmas special, but they kind of make sense for the kooky Pee-wee universe. They were basically a musical act. They were in showbiz since the 1950s, but then they sort of rose to a new popularity during the 80s because of their like extreme campiness. And became kind of like this cult act and these sort of queer icons. And they did some interesting covers during the 80s that of some prominence, like Whip It, The Neutron Dance, and Walk Like an Egyptian.
Uh-huh. Wait, Arlo, what was that? Like, what are those like weird like things you like the spoons you have? Like
oh, those are the Dion quintuplets. Those are not the Del Rubio triplets.
No, I know, I know. I just meant, like, what, like, explain what those are, because that was, like, that baffles me. I don't understand it.
Well, in the Great Depression, there were five identical quintuplets born in North Bay, Ontario. For whatever reason, because old-timey times was old-timey times, it sort of made people... gave people hope to have these like five identical babies that all lived, and it was unheard of for quintuplets to live at this time. Now it's not so crazy with modern medicine or whatever. And then they had a really sad life that involved sort of being in a zoo. But yeah, anyway,
I was gonna say, like, it's great. Yeah. It's like, what a miracle. Five of you were born. Now you get to be circus animals for the rest of your life.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, no internet. They were very popular. There's an entire amusement park called Quintland. And, you know, one Christmas during the Depression, they outsold, you know, Quint dolls outsold Shirley Temple dolls. That's how popular they were. So,
we have an entire, like, set of spoons, like, for these quintuplets. And I'm like, what the hell are these? Like, it was bizarre, like, finding this out.
I wish I had Del Rubio spoons. That would be Del Rubio triplet spoons.
These Del Rubio triplets at the time of this were 67 years old, by the way. So,
well, and they do a great job. Yeah. I love it. So after that, Pee-wee and Cowboy Curtis build a snowman, which comes to life, scaring them away. And then we come upon Little Richard, again, queer icon, at the skating pond. And,
Happy Pee-wee! Ow!
Yeah, baby.
Yeah,
just great. And again, like they couldn't believe that they got little Richard, that he agreed to do it, right? And like, he's such a good sport about it. He does such a great job, and he's having trouble skating. So Pee-wee demonstrates by performing amazing tricks, but then Pee-wee's stunt double Hans ruins the con.
You know, it's funny with Little Richard, like, people will comment looking at him for many years about how young he looked forever and ever, right? Like, he never really aged. But to me as a kid, I always thought of Little Richard as super old. So when I found out that he was at this point, what, 55, 56 years old, I was like, what? Like, he was so young. Yeah. I was just like, he's 80. I always thought that he was just such an old man. He only died
he
3 years ago.
The rock and roll.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's one of the first. He's the top three of rock and roll people. Crazy.
Back in the playhouse, everybody warms up with some hot chocolate. And it's time for Katie Lang's music number.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Lady Jeez. Katie Lang.
Yeah. She sings Jingle Bell Rock with Cool Cat, Dirty Dog, and Chicky Baby. And this is, you know, before Katie Lang looked like your, like, cool lesbian aunt. Like, this is when they still had her in, like, rhinestone cowboy, Grand Ole Opry dresses. It's a little embarrassing.
I don't think this was, like, her like they had her in this. Like, I think she was like, this is my jam. I'm going to do this. And I think that, this was her shtick at the moment, at that time.
I mean,
it feels a little awkward.
I was talking about that. I was watching at this point when we were watching, my stepkid was in with us, and they were like, oh, like, did you know that she was a lesbian? Like, watching this, because it seems very clear. And I was like, when I was 10, I did not know what a lesbian was, but I knew. Like, I also knew. Right. I'm like, yeah. So Katie Lang at this point, I mean, people in Canada knew her. I didn't know if she had any, like, a lot of fame in the States. I thought most of her, you know, her kind of height of popularity came after this, but I could be wrong.
No, this is right after her first album.
Mm-hmm.
Her first album specifically was passed by some kind of music executive to Paul Rubens, and Paul Rubens was like, yeah, let's get her on the show. So this is right after sort of her first major album.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, it's a little awkward of a performance. She really goes for it, which is great, but yeah, it's,
something,
you know, it's something. Then we're hanging stockings by the fireplace. A clocky announces that it's time for a penny cartoon.
Oh, before that, we have Randy and Terry. Randy is another puppet who is a bully and has red hair. And his face looks like a toilet is what... like his
he face. Was he was designed to look like the auntie Howdy Doody.
Yeah, he's a little prick, and and there's usually a scene in Pee-wee's Playhouse where Randy is tormenting Terry, who is a pterodactyl, and so Randy here is telling Terry that there is no Santa Claus, and we get the whole Pee-wee.
Yes, there is a Santa Claus.
Pee-wee,
yes,
Randy tells me there's no Santa Claus. Pee-wee. Yeah, so one of my favorite gags on the show.
Right, so Randy doesn't believe in Santa Claus, but not so much that he's not going to hang up a stocking.
And of course, Pee-wee has these comically large stockings, two of them, so because he is so greedy and wants all the presents.
So it's time for a penny cartoon, and these happen during every episode, I guess, of Pee-wee's Playhouse, and they're basically sort of the ramblings of a little girl with claymation. And that's basically exactly how they created them. They basically found, you know, an 8-year-old girl, gave her a microphone, you know, asked her a generalized question, and, you know, recorded it and then animated around it.
It's awesome. And, it's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
We learned in the commentary that every single penny was a different girl. They didn't have the same penny every time. It's they just found a random child, gave them a microphone, and just did it.
That's so good.
For our Canadian listeners, a penny is a coin that is worth 1 cent that we have not had in 10 years. But for some reason, they still worship them in the United States. So
love them. Yeah. Can't get enough.
Okay.
Oh, sorry to offend. Hit a nerve.
I'm like, wait a minute. I collect crushed pennies. So ooh, like, I'm just like,
loves them.
I'm like, wait, okay. Like, I love pennies. Like, stop talking shit. Like,
you're American.
Hey,
you have those American roots. Of course you do.
Tracks.
Yeah. Here's another one that's going to hurt you, Drew. Fuck the $1 bill.
Oh,
shots fired, biatch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wish you could see my face right now. I'm like, next time I see you, we're gonna talk about some stuff.
We got rid of the $1 bill the year before this special came out. So
now if you go to a bar and you forget about your like wallet, like if some change falls out, like that's like $60. Like, yep. I'm just saying.
You're not wrong.
That's a big bad problem.
So I'm not wrong.
After the penny cartoon, Frankie and Annette are starving, so Pee-wee gives them bread and water.
I love it. Uh-huh.
Good.
Like Jesus.
So Countess visits and gives Pee-wee another fruitcake. And then Zsa Zsa Gabor
shows up. Of course.
It's weird.
This one is not, I don't know. I would call this one a little less timeless than some of the other characters.
Well, and it's like, it's kind of a weird visit. Like, she seems like she doesn't quite know where she is. Like, she barely knows where she is. She seems like she might be on some kind of Quaalude or something. There is
maybe Flory gave her something.
There's conspicuously no commentary on the DVD during this part. So I wonder if maybe she wasn't really well and they just didn't want to say anything. So she gets whisked away within a few minutes and the picture phone rings again. And it's Dinah Shore.
Yes.
And if you need to know who Dinah Shore is, she was an incredibly famous vocalist during the big band era is where she got her start. One of the most famous vocalists to come out of that era.
Uh-huh. There you go.
Wow.
I just figured I'd strike up the...
Great,
what is happening?
I feel like I'm at a Glenn Miller hospital.
I can't stop laughing. That was so funny. So
then in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, she started hosting these shows, these, you know, variety hours, the Dinah Shore show. And then going into the 80s and 90s, she started doing like talk shows and things like that. So she had a really long career. Big star in the 40s and 50s and 60s especially. So she's calling to sing Pee-wee a song. She's singing 12 Days of Christmas. And this whole thing is a gag, you know? It's, you know, on the 187th day of Christmas, my true love, it just goes on and on and on. And of course, Pee-wee has the attention span of, you know, an actual child and can't deal with it. The cast was saying on the commentary, like, she was just game for this gag. She totally got the joke. She really relished singing that song. You know, like, when she got five golden, like, she just, like, she really got it. And they were just thrilled with her. And so, yeah, eventually Pee-wee puts it's the actual Pee-wee Herman Halloween costume that was available in stores at the time, puts it on a dummy so that he can escape.
Is she not Jewish?
Yes, she is.
I believe so. So were the
dinosaurs are also Jewish.
We're gonna get there.
Whoa. Yeah. I just thought the funny gag was her singing the Christmas song when she's Jewish.
I was like, I'm just saying.
Paul Rubens also has some Jewish lineage.
Yep.
So. But he was not in Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song, so I didn't know that. Dinah Shore was.
Well, sorry, Drew, you're not actually Jewish because you weren't in Anna.
I wasn't.
I'll put him in. Drew is Jewish. So there you go. Now it's canon.
You're welcome, Drew.
That was great. Drew is Jewish.
Arlo, just to throw in a David Bowie connection, David Bowie and Iggy Pop were on her TV show in 1977, but Iggy Pop was singing and David Bowie was just backing up, playing the keyboard. It's a fantastic clip.
David Bowie is all over this special, and I love it. So while Dinah Shore is singing, Pee-wee does get a call on the other line, and it's Oprah Winfrey. And
you get a fruitcake, and you get a fruitcake.
Uh-huh.
Thanks, Anne Courtney. Well,
and then, you know, they did sort of book the some of the biggest stars at that time, right? And not that Oprah isn't still a gigantic star. This visit from Oprah is kind of the definition of, like, phoning it in.
Yeah, she sent a video clip, like a one-minute video clip.
Yeah, Oprah was not on set. She did a video segment from Chicago, which is pretty obvious. So then we're on to the Latino heritage part of the special. And this is one of the reasons that this special and Pee-wee's Playhouse in general was, you know, in part so praised. Because, like, Pee-wee's Friends represented a lot of different cultures. You know, the guest stars, the regulars, the puppets, like, there's so many different backgrounds that are represented here. And that's one of the reasons that this special and also the show in general was really important to a lot of people.
Well, I mean, you've given it some praise, and I would give it more praise than not. We also get Pee-wee flubbing Feliz Navidad, like, in a
Feliz Navidad.
Like, oh, I don't understand this funny language, so, you know, Feliz Navidad. Yeah. Like,
that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
I was a little bit like, you didn't quite stick the landing. Like, don't.
Yeah. Like, Spanish people talk funny.
Yeah.
When we do learn about the Break the Piñata game, which is Mexican Christmas tradition, and while Pee-wee tries to break the piñata, absolute icon Charo sings Feliz Navidad.
Not just icon, but like an incredible musician, a beautiful musician who like knows what's up. Like they were like an icon as like a pop star, but more than that, like I think they
were
like
they're one of the best classical guitarists in the world. They really are.
Oh,
and you
wouldn't
necessarily know it because of their, their persona and that kind of thing. But they are an incredibly talented vocalist and classical guitarist, absolutely. And on the DVD commentary, everyone was saying that Charo is 100% genuine. What you see on the screen is exactly how she is in real life. And I have heard exactly the same thing from friends of mine who worked on cruise ships who have met her. Just that she is a wonderful, like, dynamic, warm person, both on and off the screen.
Also, no one has been able to nail down Charles' birth year, so. I'm serious.
2003.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been disputed. March 13th, 1941, 1947, 1949, January 15th, 1951, but not enough evidence to give Charo a birth date on the Wikipedia. So there you go.
Well, she looks so weird. Whatever the age, she looks great. I'm sure there's no plastic surgery that's been involved
or
anything. But yeah, she gives a great performance. It's beautiful. And
I'd love to see you come at her and just be like, hey, have you had plastic surgery? And you're like, she's just like, coochie, coochie. Like,
So Char gives Pee-wee a gift of pastel de fruta, which is another fruitcake. And next, we usher in Mrs. Renee for the Hanukkah portion of the show. And again, pretty significant. One of the reasons the special won so many accolades, it was one of the first Christmas specials to even acknowledge Judaism or Hanukkah.
Nice.
So Mrs. Renee gives Pee-wee 8 fruitcakes for the 8 nights of Hanukkah. And we get to sing the dreidel song with the bouncing jambi head. And then the dreidel spins into the dinosaur family's home, who, in a recurring segment, if you've seen Pee-wee's Playhouse before, live in a mouse hole in the playhouse. And, of course, they're Jewish, because dinosaurs are before the birth of Christ, right?
Hey, yes.
So, very cerebral.
What they think.
So, Pee-wee and his friends are putting the finishing touches on the Christmas tree. And Terry puts a star on top of the tree, and it lights up. And Randy's being an asshole again. He doesn't understand the meaning of Christmas.
I love Randy, by the way. He's my favorite.
Yeah.
Randys are always dicks.
So magic.
That's true.
Sorry,
so
Andy.
So Patrick's screen plays a video of the Nativity of Jesus, which they actually had to film at a local school because they couldn't find appropriate stock footage, apparently.
Weird.
And Randy is touched by the true meaning of Christmas and gives Pee-wee another fruitcake. And Cowboy Curtis also wants to give him one last fruitcake. But by this point, Pee-wee is inviting all the fruitcakes because he's constructing a new wing of the playhouse. He made entirely of fruitcake by homoerotic construction workers.
Oh, like top
cake alert. Look at these two. Look at these guys. They're dripping.
Sexy fucking, yeah, fucking construction Jack. Workers.
Yeah. Shirtless homoerotic construction
yeah.
workers.
Oh, yeah. Look so at those good. Biceps. Fuck, you bounce a quarter off that shit. Look at that.
Jesus.
It's like a freaking
or a
meat
penny.
Locker.
Penny and Drew.
Beautiful.
Shirt.
Well, yeah. Penny. No, don't get Drew excited now. He's going to have to go lie down. He's like, oh, you talking about pennies again? I love it.
So everyone sings a very quick medley of Christmas carols. And then they hear sleigh bells, which signals the arrival of Santa Claus.
Anthem.
And he's a great Santa, isn't he? And yep. everyone in the cast was just like, this guy, like, this is Santa. This is Santa. And they had Santa auditions for like 3 days, and there was so many different types of Santa, and they were like, this is Santa.
He didn't bring me any like crushed pennies. I'm just saying. Like,
yeah, see,
strike,
he admits it.
Strike one on Santa.
Strike so, one on Santa. Yeah.
Santa has a problem. Pee-wee's list is so big that he didn't have enough presents for any of the other children, and he needs all of Pee-wee's presents so the other children can have some.
Pee-wee's first reaction, though, it's like, oh, well, I don't have presents for the other kids because you had so much stuff. And Pee-wee was like, well, fuck it. Like,
yeah.
Give me the presents.
Sorry to hear it.
Yeah.
Fine by me.
So Pee-wee remembers what he said earlier, which is Christmas is the time we should be thinking about what we can do for others. And he concedes to let Santa have all the presents. And in exchange, Santa lets Pee-wee ride in his sleigh and help him deliver the presents.
Whee!
So it's a happy ending for everybody.
Like theoretically, he could just get Magic Johnson to like make him a sleigh.
Out of dots, Magic Screen.
Out of dots,
Magic Screen, Magic like, Johnson. Like, they're related. Yeah, it's all the same.
Magic Johnson had to go to his Lakers game. He only had an hour. He's long gone.
Jambi grants the second wish.
Yes.
Which did not come true, everybody, like in real life, which is peace on earth.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Aw, boo.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Oh, my God.
Well, he does wish that everyone has the merriest of Christmases, basically, and a happy new year. Ah! Everyone screams. Pee-wee leaves on Santa's sleigh, waves goodbye. The credits roll while Dinosaur reprises the 12 Days of Christmas. And then at the end, she's like, Pee-wee?
My only critique of this whole show is that they should have had a much longer montage of Pee-wee and Santa flying in that sleigh. I was like, there were like 10 seconds of it, and then that was over, and I was like, I wanted to see so much more. So
same here.
Yeah.
I love everything about this special, and I love all of the icons that guest starred on it. I love how weird it is. I love all the weird performances that you might not ever see today because everything's so slick today. I just love it. And, you know, Paul Rubens, he was like a really special talent, and I know, Drew, you met him a few times.
Oh, really?
No, more than a few times. Oh, like,
oh,
like,
do tell.
Like five or six times. Like,
best friends?
I would say.
yeah, it's more than a few. Like, yeah. It just kept happening. Like, I kept running into him. Like, and he was, like, really cool. He was actually, like, a really nice guy. Like, and I remember the first time I ran into him, it was at a book signing at like Amoeba Records in San Francisco, and he everyone kept like coming up to him and telling him like all this like amazing stuff. And like, I was just like, I didn't want to say that to him. I was just like, hey, high five. Like, you're a cool guy. Like, and like, I tried to like not like be weird. But yeah, like, I saw him live in LA. And yeah, no, I've met Paul Rubens like many times, and he's actually a really nice guy. Like we had drinks at like this bar once, I think we had gin and tonics, and like, he just, I don't know, like, no, yeah, I bought him a drink. I was like, and he was like, yeah, I want a gin and tonic. And I was like, okay. And so like, him and I like hung out and like had drinks. Like, it was, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to explain. Like,
we're like, what's Flory really like in real life?
Yeah.
Is he really a perv, or is he like cool?
Well, like, the city he like his parents lived in was like a city away from where I lived in Florida when I lived in Florida. So like, it was like, it was just like one of those things where it was like I just kept bumping into Paul Rubens, and like, I don't know. It's, I don't know how to explain it. I'm sorry. I'm like,
that's a good, like, bumping in thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's worse people you could bump into.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Like, big time.
But yeah, the absolute talent involved in writing this episode, you know, you know, the talent that they were able to procure for this episode, for me, it's got a timeless quality, and I'm really happy it was made.
This is my favorite Christmas special ever, and I really love it. So, like, my thoughts on it are that, like, I love watching it every year, and like, Arlo makes me watch Christmas specials every year, and like, this is my favorite one to watch. Like, I will like never be over it. Like, it's like one of those things. So that's my thought. Like, I love it. Like, it's the perfect like Christmas special.
So for those of you who watched it for the first time,
you just want to know. I mean, it was exactly what I would have hoped it would have been. Like, they held true to Pee-wee's Playhouse. I recognized everything that they did, and it was certainly a top 10 Christmas thing. So, yeah, awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Suitably merry.
Yes. And it's just perfect moment in time. Nobody could recreate that or get that weird. It's once in a kind of, I don't know, generation sort of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, it does feel, you know, like,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It just is
a
so
snapshot in time. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think our kids should see. I'm gonna make my kids watch it tomorrow, actually. So
I'm sure they'll be thrilled. They'll be like, "Mom,
funny. It's funny.
Mom, it is funny. Mom, why?
He will watch this."
All right. Well, everybody, thank you so much for joining us for this Christmas extravaganza episode. And if you haven't watched the Pee-wee's Playhouse Christmas special, please do seek it out and watch it. It is really fantastic. If for nothing else, then for the David Bowie connection.
You won't regret it. It's really good.
What do we have coming up next week? Next week we've got
nothing.
A Little Estobo.
Yeah. No, episode. We have. Woo! 1 week from now, I'm going to repost. I'm going to repost an old episode, one of our old holiday, you know, reviews of Degrassi. And then when we come back in the new year, the first thing we'll do is the Littlest Hobo episode that we're going to record tonight before Christmas. So excited to share that with you. And then,
right. And that's going to be what, season one, episode four?
Season one, episode four.
Okay. So if anybody wants to watch ahead and watch that hobo episode, that's the one we're going to be doing.
And then if we're looking ahead right now, it's probably looking like January 5th. We're going to be recording our episode, inducting people into the Hall of Fame.
Ho ho.
The Narbos and Broomheads Hall of Fame. So stay tuned for that. That one will be out in you know, in early January as well. So excited. And then I guess we'll get back into Degrassi. Yeah.
Well,
we have to.
Well, listeners, we all, from all of us at Narbos and Broomheads, thank you so much for being with us for another year, and we hope you have the happiest of holidays and a wonderful start to the new year. I'm Arlo. You can follow me on Instagram at ArloeScott.
I'm Ted. Say Watt3 on the Instagram machine. Let's go to Courtney.
I'm Courtney. Courtney.1293.
I'm Alan. Slip with five eyes or slip. Follow this podcast at Narbos and Broomheads Podcast on Instagram, at Narbos Podcast on Twitter, and on our Facebook group. There's, you know, Narbos and Broomheads there if you search for it. And find us on all the podcast platforms and give us big ratings because you know you love us. And write us, narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com. And Drew, thanks for joining us. How can we reach you?
Oh, I'm just Drew. I don't really care about stuff.
just type it in the internet, Drew.
Just find me. It's fine. I don't know. Yeah.
He's newly Canadian. It's okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thanks everybody, and we will catch you next time. Ho ho ho.
See ya.
Bye.
Merry Christmas, baby.
Baby.
Well, I just said I was going to my love. I would never do my homework. I would stay up late and dream about Kylan. I would never get girls out of my.
Maybe I would.
I would walk around the cafe, cut! Just to get to my dreams. Everyone thinks I'm so good. I went crazy, had to cut school. Yeah!